welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 278 of the podcast. And it is the 14th of July, 2016, as I record this a little early, as I am preparing for my big 100K walk this weekend. If you have missed my previous updates, I'm doing the Race to the Stones, which is Lucknow in Oxfordshire, to Avebury Standing Stones, which are not as famous as Stonehenge, but are pretty awesome. This is a walk along the Ridgeway, which is one of the UK's oldest walks. So it's very beautiful, but also I have bought blister plasters, painkillers, and I'm basically surrounded by a pharmacy, tick removing devices and all these different things. Very exciting. I will let you know how it goes next week. Although when you actually listen to this on the feed, I will have already completed it. So you could always have a look at Twitter at The Creative Pen or my Facebook pages if you're interested. I usually share my more personal pictures of my walks on my author page, which is facebook.com/JFPenAuthor. So there you go, but usually put them on Twitter as well. Okay, so today I have an interview with Damon Courtney from Book Funnel, and we have a wide-ranging conversation about tech stuff, the author as startup, concerns about piracy versus obscurity, why free is still useful, mobile reading and how that is changing publishing, and some predictions for the future of indies and tech. And it is a fun interview because Damon and I do geek out on some techie stuff, and I know Damon has been on a few other podcasts recently, but although we do mention Book Funnel and talk a bit about that, we talk a lot more about other stuff. So I hope you will enjoy that. So in publishing news this week, I think actually the most interesting thing, and it's kind of not publishing, but I think it has a lot of application to publishing, storytelling, where things are going. The most interesting thing that has happened is Pokemon Go, which, if you've missed it, is this kind of augmented reality game on mobile devices where you go and hunt Pokemon monsters in real places using Google Maps integration in the game. And people are going absolutely nuts for it. It's kind of spread like this viral thing. It's the very definition of what viral is. People are kind of dropping everything and going hunting Pokemon. And what's interesting is they are doing a lot of exercise as well. So it seems to be the first gamification of exercise that actually works. There's all these memes going around about people actually, you know, their legs are hurting because they've been doing too much Pokemon hunting, because you actually go to physical locations and then you use your phone and you might aim it at a, and I haven't done it, that's why I'm kind of making this up, but I've been reading about it, and you basically, you know, you can hold your phone up at your local park and there might be a monster there and you can see it, you can see the real life background and then the monster on top. And this is augmented reality. And a lot of people are thinking that augmented reality is going to be a lot bigger than virtual reality, because virtual reality, you have to put headset on and you're in an entirely different world. Whereas augmented reality is actually like a layer on top of the real world. So for example, instead of me right now, I'm speaking while looking at my Mac, but actually the Mac doesn't have to be there. I can have a virtual keyboard with a virtual screen and could achieve the same thing by typing, you know, or talking and seeing the dictation on a screen that is literally just superimposed over the environment. So people are considering that this augmented reality will be much more easily used in the world. And I'm certainly very keen on it. For example, this is one of those introvert issues, you know, and I've talked before about how when I go to conferences and things, I will spend a lot of time beforehand, you know, using Twitter to see who's going. So if there's an event hashtag, I'll sit on the hashtag, have a look, follow people, have a look at their profiles, maybe look at their blog. So I'll spend a good you know, good few hours before an event, making sure I know a few of the people who are going. But when you get to an event, often people look different to their profile picture. Or you kind of want, what you want to appear above people's heads is a sort of what their Twitter handle is, and, you know, maybe what they've updated, or something about them. So a little thing would pop up above my head that says thriller author, introvert. You know, you'd see that in AR and you could come talk to me, that type of thing. Anyway, I would love that. And I wear contact lenses as I'm pretty blind, and I would definitely be up for getting some AR tech embedded contact lenses. So who knows? But it's appropriate when, you know, I'm having this chat with Damon. It was recorded a few weeks ago, so we don't talk about augmented reality, or at least I don't think we do. But I do think that this type of thing will be brilliant for storytelling. You know, if we can involve people in a physical world, then that is awesome. And it reminded me of a slightly more dystopian view of augmented reality, but an excellent read if you like techno thriller. It's a book called Daemon, D-A-E-M-O-N, by Daniel Suarez, S-U-A-R-E-Z. Excellent book. Started me into techno thrillers. I would love to write a techno thriller at some point. It might happen. Okay, so what else is going on? Thanks to Patrick Mayer, who emailed me to say that Apple has approved Scrivener for iOS for the App Store. So iPads, iPhone, iPod Touch should have Scrivener. So he emailed me. I haven't checked it, so I'm assuming this is correct. $20, release date 20th of July. I know a lot of people ask me if Scrivener's on the iPad, for example. So hopefully now it will be. So I'd love to know if you try it and how it goes. So that's cool. In my own writing, I'm kind of doing this dual thing at the moment, and it's going really well. I'm really enjoying it. I'm finally examining my own creative process in great detail. So I'm doing an outline for End of Days, which is Arcane book 9. And so I'm forcing myself to outline more before I start to write in order to try and do something more original. I've kind of painted myself into a bit of a corner with a book title called End of Days. I have found something original, but now I need to make sure the whole book is, you know, is not just an end of day cliche. So that's fun. So I'm outlining more. Also, I'm writing how to write a novel as I do it, trying to capture the process and the things that come up as I write. So both of them will take longer than they would have taken because I'm going to try and do them together, which is interesting. Three events you might be interested in, one virtual, two live. So the lovely Brian Cohen from the Sell More Book Show is doing a free webinar on five ways to hook your readers. And Brian is a copywriter and has just released a book on sizzling book synopses, or sales descriptions, or back blurbs, however you want to call them. But basically, we all have a very few lines to hook our readers on the book sales page. And this webinar will help you get yours sorted. And I will be attending, as this is an area we could all improve. And you know, what we're very lucky as indies that we can update our sales text. And I've certainly done this a number of times over the years and very willing to do it again. I think we're very blind to our own books as authors. So by trying to look at it from an external perspective can really help. So that webinar is on Friday, 22nd of July. You can find more information or get your virtual ticket at thecreativepen.com/Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. And I'm assuming you'll be able to get the replay. So that is a free webinar on Friday, 22nd of July, thecreativepen.com/Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, and links on the show notes. And also two more things. So if you would like to come and meet me live or come to an event, I'm doing two this fall, I guess fall/winter. So if you're in the US, I'm speaking at the Digital Commerce Summit in Denver, Colorado. Details at thecreativepen.com/Denver. And very excited about that. My first time in Colorado, and also the Digital Commerce Summit has some amazing speakers. So I'm going to be just as excited as a participant as a speaker. And also, if you're in the UK, I'm doing a live event in November with Orna Ross, founder of the Alliance of Independent Authors and a friend of mine. and that will be on how to make a living and a life with your writing. And we'll be talking about money mindset, how to make an income from books and other things related to writing. More information and tickets at thecreativepen.com/NOV16, NOV16. Short for November 2016. So thecreativepen.com/NOV16. And if you have my book, How to Make a Living with Your Writing, we will be going through that type of information. But it's very different when you do it in sort of a live event. So there we go. That is some stuff that's going on. So thanks as ever for your emails and tweets. I always love to get them, and I have some great ones today. Nathan Russell, and this is the first one I've had, listening to the show while hunting Pokemon. doing Pokemon Go, a very addictive alternate reality game, and sent me a picture of the Pokemon that he presumably found while listening to the show. Thanks, Nathan. That's awesome. I'm very pleased that I can be virtually part of this exciting game. I'm kind of scared about playing it myself, to be honest, although maybe on my 100K, I might be really motivated to find Pokemon around 45 kilometers, and I'm really tired. Tony Ortiz says, I took this for you on the train ride home from the day job and made me a video from the train of Queens Cemetery in New York. And I have taken that train, I think. I've been past that cemetery before you go over the bridge, I think it is. But very, very cool. Thank you so much, Tony. I don't think anyone's ever made me a video before of a cemetery. So I'm very excited about that. Thank you. Celine Jean-Jean. Or Jean, you're going to have to tell me, Celine, but I think it's Jean. That's how I would say it. It's very French. Listening to the podcast while hiking in Hong Kong and watching the storm clouds roll in, and sent a beautiful picture of the harbour. Hong Kong is definitely on my list. It's one of those places, I think, a bit like London, that's a kind of melting pot of cultures. So yeah, definitely want to go there. Kelly Charon, listening to my favourite podcast while hiking on a break from editing. Lovely forest picture of British Columbia, gorgeous. Rebecca Simkin, caught the podcast while corresponding with happy authors who got their shortlist notices from me for the Sunburst Award. Sounds lovely. Safa Shaxi, started my email list as suggested by the lovely indie author Creative Pen, who's been such an inspiration. Thank you, Safa. And I wanted to mention this because, you know, as an early author, I think Safa is doing a really good thing. And, you know, when you first start an email list, you feel like an idiot because you might have one sign up or two sign ups, and maybe in the first month you get five and the next month you get seven, and you're wondering what the hell you're doing, and it's kind of embarrassing. But the point is that if you start that list within a few months or years, you will have a lot more people joining that list, and it is super powerful. Believe me, as someone who's been doing this since 2008, it's a very good idea to start your list early because whatever the technology that comes along, you can always use that email list as a way to reach readers. And finally, Jessica Johansson, I thought this was great. Last night, a writer friend told me it's impossible to make money self-publishing, told him he was wrong and directed him to you. Thanks, Jessica. And I wanted also to read this out because there are so many people who have the wrong idea about writing and publishing and, you know, who don't have a clue, basically. And I do meet these people a lot. I mean, they include my family and some of my friends. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, I feel it's a bit like if you are of a particular faith, like if you're a Christian or whatever, and you want to demonstrate Christian living, don't go around preaching about it, just demonstrate it. And I kind of, this is my approach now. Instead of preaching self-publishing, I try and demonstrate by the way I live and by my creative output that this is how, you know, this is possible. So I hope that helps other people who are frustrated at those people who don't understand what we do. So thanks as ever for your emails and comments and tweets. I really love to hear from you. You can tweet me at The Creative Pen, or you can email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com. And as ever, I love the interaction we have on the show. It really just makes every week fun. Okay, so today's episode is sponsored by 99 Designs. You can get a power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. And on 99 Designs, you can get all kinds of designs for your author business, including book covers, merchandising, branding, business cards, illustrations, artwork, and much more. And I will be having J.A. Huss, who's a romance author, coming on the show in next month, and she does merchandising, and we'll be talking a lot more about the types of merchandising you can do. Something I definitely want to get into. I think, you know, with print on demand technology on other things like mugs and t-shirts and stuff like that, there's definitely cool things we can do. So that's another potential for 99 Designs. Most people use it for book covers, but So how does it work? Just to go through it, you decide on your project, you type it all up in the very easy to use form. For example, if you want an ebook or a print cover, a Facebook ad, a custom header for your website, or a custom illustration. So for example, I had the key to the gates of hell designed. Of course, it's not real, honest. And I used that key on the book cover of Gates of Hell. So you can see it if you look at my Gates of Hell book by J.F. Penn. You'll see that key. And also in the print version, I use it as the sort of chapter illustration. And I've also had a map done for the dark fantasy thriller Risen Gods. So when you're defining your project, you know, add as much detail as possible. For example, your genre, you know, if it's a, well, the key to the gates of hell is always going to be quite dark, but, you know, like a fantasy map, for example, could be, you know, a happy, happy map with smiley suns on, or it could be a very dark map. So, you know, with creatures and things. So definitely give examples. If you're doing book covers, use examples of covers you like. You know, a horror book versus romance, different colours, even if a book title might be similar, there'll be very different colours and images. Then you will start getting designs. And once you start getting designs, you know, you might have a ton. And if you use that power pack upgrade, you will get more designs. And you can comment, you can share it with your social network, you can post it on your blog, you can do a poll, and then eventually you decide on the shortlist and pick the winner. And you only pay if you're happy, and then you get the designs, and it's really super fun. I like crowdsourcing other people's brains for these types of things. You could also use it for a logo for your publishing imprint if you use one. Lots and lots of ideas. So if you need things designed, check out 99 Designs. You can get a power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. Okay, so this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons, Jared van der Hilst and Rhonda Lane. Thank you so much. And to everyone supporting on Patreon, like the tweets and emails, it really demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. I am also, after I record this, I'm recording the extra Q&A for Patreon supporters. I have a ton of questions from the supporters this month, and I'll be posting that. Well, you should already have that in your feed if you are a Patreon supporter. And if you start supporting, you get access to the backlist. And now there will be 7 or 8 months worth of extra audio. And you can support for even just $2 per month, or $10 a month, or whatever you would like to support. Certainly you could do it for less than a coffee a month, and you'll get that extra Q&A. So you can support the show at patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you so much. And remember that all the links that I mention are always on the show notes, and there's always a transcript and a link to the video on YouTube and all of that. So you can always check out the show notes and the backlist. If you go to thecreativepen.com/podcast, you will find links to everything there. Let's get on with the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Damon Courtney. Hi Damon.
Hey, Joanna, how are you?
I am good. Great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Damon is a fantasy author, and he's also the founder of the fantastic bookfunnel.com, which we're talking about today. But Damon, just start off by telling us a bit more about you and your writing and your business background.
Well, so I'm a software developer by trade. That's what I've done my whole life. I mean, literally my whole life. Since I was about 7 years old, I've been programming on computers. And so that has been my career. And then with the Kindle and self-publishing, you know, boom that began back in 2009 or 10 or so, I realized my dream of wanting to be a writer, which I didn't actually know it was a dream until I read a self-published book, and then I got to the back, and the author's note in the back was basically just like, thanks for reading, and, you know, it mentioned that he publishes it himself, and I remember reading that and going, wait a minute, you could just, like, write a book and put it out there? Because I'd always loved the idea of telling stories. I've been a fantasy reader my whole life, but the idea of going through the traditional system and all that, I was just like, well, I would just love to write stories and put them out there. And so that sort of started that journey. And I have three books published in a trilogy, which took me about 4 years to get all three of them done. And then the last one was published the November before last. And BookFunnel was an idea that I'd had for a couple of years and had sort of backburnered, because if I had allowed myself to think about it or work on it, I never would have finished the books. Mm. So I kind of serve those two muses of programming and writing, but only one can be in my headspace at a time because it will shove everything else out of the way. So as soon as I finished the trilogy, then I started work in earnest on BookFunnel.
Mm. Before we get into BookFunnel, what similarities do you see between the tech world, the software development world, and the indie space?
Well, I think that they're linked completely, right? Because the ebooks and the whole indie revolution really wouldn't have existed without the Kindle. And the Kindle is all about technology. And before that, I mean, print books are lovely. I've read them my whole life, and I have nothing against them. But there was no way that the indie explosion was ever going to happen if we all had to go out and do a print run of 1,000 books and then try to hand sell them out of the back of a car, right? So technology has completely enabled the indie publishing revolution. And more than that, as we continue to move forward, mobile is what is driving the future of not just indie publishing, but indie music, you know, and it, I don't think it's long before it's not just indie anymore. It's not indie music. It's just music. It's how music will be produced. It's how books will be published. There will always be traditional publishers, but I think the line is going to get blurred a lot as we move forward, especially as I think about, like, my nieces who are teenagers. And when they grow up, they don't know the difference. If I send them a book, they have no idea who published it. They don't care. They just care, is it a fun book to read and do they enjoy it? So I think that they're intimately linked, because we really can't have sort of indie publishing without all the technology which has enabled it.
Mm. And then what about also the indie author as startup? Because obviously you know a lot about tech startups and how you have to be a kind of entrepreneur. So what do you see as the similarities or how indies can be more like tech startups, I suppose?
Well, so I think the beauty of being an indie author, like sometimes being a startup, you know, it depends on the kind of startup you're trying to do. A startup like BookFunnel was something that I was able to do just me, and then eventually my wife jumped in, and the two of us were doing it together. But it was the kind of thing that I could start just me, and that's the beauty of indie publishing, is it is just you, and eventually you will grow to the point where you have that team of people, you have the editors, you have the cover designers, and you have people that you work with. And so even though you are the sort of master of your domain, you kind of have a you know, on a contract basis, but you have a company around you. Mm. And that's I love that, because I love the idea that you can start very, very small, but it's still, you know, we all know, and I know you've talked about it on your show and others have talked about it on other shows, you still need to have some startup seed money, right? A little bit of capital, because you probably do need an editor, maybe even a developmental editor when you're first starting out, because, I mean, I know I did. I'd never written anything, and I sent my first book to my editor along with a note that just says, I just need you to tell me if this is crap or not, because I had no idea. I mean, I've read fantasy stories my whole life, but I can't judge my own work. I can't tell if this is good or not. And it turns out it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great either. It needed some work. And then I had to buy a cover, and that was a few hundred dollars. And in fantasy, you can't do a photo manipulation cover. You need hand-drawn, illustration. So you do have to kind of have a little bit of that startup money to get off the ground. The beauty is it's not nearly as much as the millions mm-hmm. that some startup companies need to get off the ground.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. But I think the need to think about being an entrepreneur and, actually getting into doing things for marketing purposes, you have to be the creator, the maker and the manager. I think that was why Combinator Guy came up with that.
Mm-hmm. And it is. And that's why being an indie publisher is like being an entrepreneur. You're not just gone are the days where you can just say, hey, I wrote a book, everybody come get it. That doesn't work. And it's never worked in startups, right? Mm. Facebook didn't just say, and we built this site and somebody can come look at it if you want to. They had to aggressively push themselves out. BookBub, who is the crowning jewel of marketing for indie publishers right now, spent millions of dollars to build the list of readers that they had before they could turn it around and start making money off of it. So it does take time and it takes effort and it does take thinking like an entrepreneur, not just, I want to write books and that sounds like fun. If you just want to write, I mean, that's great. And you can certainly publish that way. You can just write them and not edit them and make a little cover in Microsoft Paint and you can put them out there. And as long as you don't care about selling books, that's fantastic. You're going to have a good old time. But if you want to sell books, you've got to think like a marketer, like an entrepreneur.
Fantastic. So on that topic, what is BookFunnel and why did you start it?
So I had the idea a couple of years ago and it basically came from I was getting to the point where I had my books and the whole first in free series is a really effective marketing technique. Mm. People have never heard of you as an author, and so they're looking at your name next to the names of people they know, and they're saying, why do I want to try this guy? And so my proposition was, well, here, I'll give you the first one free. Right. And I can make it perma-free on all the different stores. We all know how to do that. But I also wanted to be able to give it away to people. I wanted to be able to send a copy to my mom and say, hey, mom, here's the book I wrote. Well, there really wasn't a way to do that. Not for anybody who was technically challenged. And that was the biggest problem was, how do you get a free book to somebody who doesn't already know what they're doing? I'm a tech guy, so send me a Mobi file and I'll get it to my reader, no problem. But that's not most of the world. Yeah. And if I wanted to be able to reach the rest of the world, I had to have a way to do it. And I started off probably like a lot of other authors. It was like, well, here's a page on my website, and it has a Mobi and it has an EPUB, and here's some instructions.
Yeah.
If you're on an iPad, here's how you do it. And if you're on a Kindle, here's how you do it. And that the software side of my brain just said, that's not good enough. People are going to be confused. They're not going to get through that process. It's just not good enough. So I built BookFunnel because I needed something that was better. And there really wasn't anything out there that I could find that did what I needed it to do, which is deliver books.
Yeah. So to be clear, so somebody wants to give a book away for free, but not by setting it for free on Amazon or Kobo. Right. They just talk us through the process of how it works on BookFunnel.
Okay. So you upload your book through BookFunnel just like you would through any store, right? If you upload your book to Amazon, Kobo, you upload it to us and then
it's a really easy interface. It's, it's just like, click here and find your file and upload it and add the name and stuff. It's not complicated.
I like to think so.
Yeah.
in my day job as a software developer, one of my big concerns is user experience and user interface. And so I try really hard to build on that. I do try to make it easy for readers and for authors because, I mean, we get emails all the time from people who do need a little bit of help. And it always just feels like as indie authors, there's always something new to learn, right? Mm-hmm. Every single day, it's like, oh, hey, and here's this new thing. Go learn that. And so that is really, really hard. So I wanted ours to be at least as simple as it could possibly be. you create a link to that book and then share that link wherever you want readers to get your book. And for some people, that is literally on my website here. Click here and you can go get my book. Most of our authors are using it for building their mailing list. And so you sign up for my mailing list. Hey, get a free book. And once they're signed up and they're confirmed, they get an email that says, "Hi, welcome to my list. Click here to go download your free book." And that click here goes back to us. And then that's where we step in. And depending on the kind of device you have, you are given instructions to help you get it to that particular device. So if you come in on your iPad, you're going to see something different than somebody who comes in on their PC or on their Kindle Fire. Mm-hmm. And then they just walk you through the steps. And the biggest thing is if they can't walk through the steps, which is always going to be some percentage of the population, our support team will step in and help. And they're pretty awesome at it. We've tested all of these devices. We know everything there is to know about these devices. And there rarely is a case where there's one that we don't know how to get a book to it. So,
yeah. And that, you know, that person who's still got a sort of Microsoft, PC from 10 years ago with Windows XP.
We do.
With Internet Explorer. There are still people who have that, aren't they?
There are. And you'd be surprised. And they're usually looking for a PDF. And,
yeah, exactly.
And we support, we support that. We require an EPUB and a MOBI so that we can reach as many readers as possible. And then the PDF is optional. Some authors don't want to give it, but for sure, if you want to reach the widest number of readers, then offering the PDF for the really technically challenged is probably your best bet, because most of them know what a PDF is and how to read it. They've already got the software on their computer to get it open and read it. So
yeah, and so if people aren't getting this still, because the reason I'm such a fan and why you have a growing number of raving fans about BookFunnel is the problem that you solve for authors. So the problem you have solved for me is every day getting emails that say, "Thank you for your free book that I've just signed up for, but I don't know how to get it on my device." And thus you are saving me. I mean, it was probably 5 or more emails a day of technical discussion over getting devices, getting files to devices. And this might not sound like a big deal to people who might be just starting out, but if anyone is building a list, as you say, if you're doing Facebook advertising to build a list, or if you're just on your website, you have a free download, this is the way to essentially bypass tech pain, which is why I'm such a raving fan. I presume that's the reason most people are using BookFunnel.
Yes, and the big thing that we offer is that, somebody even said it, we were talking to him recently, that not only do we handle that headache, we will continue to handle that headache going forward. So every time a new device comes out, every time something changes, that's our job to figure out what has changed and figure out the new way to get the book to them. And, I've seen other people's instructions. People have said before BookFunnel came along, I kind of looked around at what everybody was doing, because I thought surely somebody had solved this problem, right? Yeah. I kept looking for somebody who'd solved it, and I kept coming up empty. And most of them were, here's a zip file with a MOBI and an EPUB, and then here's a README PDF file that sort of gives instructions. And most of them pretty much relied on the fact that you were probably on a Kindle, which I will say that in our download statistics, which we have reams of data, about 70% of our downloads go through MOBI files. So on a Kindle app or a Kindle e-reader or a Kindle Fire or some sort of Kindle reader. But that other 30%, yeah, if you've never dealt with those devices, you may not have any clue how to get a book to them. But that's what we do. We take on that tech support and we give them the instructions. And when they can't get through it, and some people can't, then our support team will walk them through it step by step and make sure that they get their book.
Oh, yeah. And you guys are great, because I've sent you like the really difficult people who, yeah. who really need a lot of help. And in the end, you're just like, what is the point? Because how are they reading, ebooks in general? But just a question there. We haven't used the term yet, but the phrase side loading is what is the problem, is the word that people have used for the problem. And of course, some people might be saying, oh, well, I'll just give away my book for free on Amazon. But the point is, you don't get people's email if you do that, and this is a way to get people's email and then give them a free book. So that first in series, as you said, I did want to ask you, since you started, is InstaFreebie the only competitor? And that's kind of arrived since you started?
They were around before we were. I actually, somebody posted about them on KBoards while I was still building BookFunnel, and I had never heard of them. So I clicked through and saw what they were doing. And yeah, I would say that they're the only thing that's as the closest thing to a competitor that we have. They take a very different method, but the idea is basically the same. Here's a free book, and we'll deliver it for you, and then we'll handle the support if you need help.
Mm. So what is the difference?
Their biggest difference is they email. So you have to give them an email address up front. And then once you give them the email, whether you're signing up for the list or not is optional. But once you give them the email, they email you the file that you've asked for, either the MOBI, the EPUB, whatever it is that you want. So now you have a book sitting in your email, in your inbox, and then they send you back to a help article that says, oh, if you have trouble downloading this, just click over here and read. And they do have support. Their support team, I'm sure, is very good at helping in the same way that our team is. We take a different tact. For us, email is always an option. Emailing the book to yourself is always there as an option. But there are many, many better ways to get your book to most of the devices that we have. Mm. And we would rather not do that. And you know, there's always a USB cable, too. But, you know, when I was building BookFunnel, to me, that was the absolute last resort option. If we can't get it any other way, we'll walk you through how to plug in a USB cable to your computer and get your book there. But that's the worst of all options. And we try to never, ever get to that point because there are better ways to get your book there. So we just take a different method of getting your books there.
Yeah. And then I should just ask a kind of broader question, because many new authors in particular are still concerned about giving books away for free. And again, many new authors are worried, like, you're sending them potentially a MOBI file that someone could then use to upload to Amazon and basically plagiarize from you. So one, kind of, what evidence have you seen that free books still work? And two, any, you know, do you have any concerns around piracy?
I, as an author, I don't have a lot of concern about piracy, about people pirating my book. We all have seen now the where an author's book is taken wholesale, republished, sometimes with a different cover, sometimes not even a different cover, and republished to Amazon and sold. And I don't know. That seems more a problem that Amazon is going to need to solve. Mm. And I know that they have algorithms in place to try to detect similarities in books and stop that from happening. But that, I don't think that's a problem that anyone can solve or that we can solve. That has to be solved from the bookstore level. And the thing is that even giving a free book on a site like ours is no different than them getting the book on Amazon, be it free or even if they paid $2.99 for it. Excuse me. They can buy your book for $2 and turn around and do the same thing, because mm-hmm. once they've bought your book, they have the MOBI file. They have the same file that they would have gotten if they'd gotten it up from us for free. As an author, I don't. The book that I give away for free is the first book of my series, and so I don't worry so much about piracy. I would just as soon as many people as can possible read that book. I'm more worried about obscurity than piracy. But I think that's and I think that becomes less of a concern as you grow and you have more books out there. But we do get a lot of first-time authors are very concerned about their first book being pirated, and I don't know a nice way to say no one's going to pirate your book. It's just not you're a first-time author. You should really be worrying about how am I going to get this book in front of people's faces. That's what you need to be mostly concerned about. But we have built features around those authors' concerns to try to help with that, in particular with ARCs. You know, even big authors have this problem, right? So you're an author who has 30 books out, and here comes the seventh book in your long-running series. And you have an ARC team, you want to give it to those people, and you don't want it to end up on a pirate site before you've even published it. That's the worst thing, right? Mm. That people can go get it, and you haven't even published it to the bookstores yet. People can't even buy it. And that is what authors really start getting concerned about.
And we should say that ARC is Advanced Reader Copy, in case people don't know. And that is basically, as you say, it's kind of exactly the same deal. You upload the book to BookFunnel and you get a link and you send that link to your street team, right?
Right.
Yeah. So one of my questions was that you now have an email feature around Advanced Reader Copies. Talk a bit about that.
So that came directly out of authors communicating with us about their concerns. You know, several authors had said, the minute I send an ARC to my street team, it ends up on a torrent, which really sucks. Because, I mean, this is your street team, right? This is supposed to be a team of hopefully, you know, readers who really like your stuff and, you know, wouldn't pirate your books because that would do damage to your career, etc. So what the certified mail feature that we built was when you're ready to send to your ARC team, you take your book and you give us the list of email addresses and we send each person on that list an individual link that is only good for them. So rather than a sort of a general purpose, click here to download your book, every single reader gets a different link that's just for them. And if they share it, then someone else will download their copy and they won't be able to download their own copy. So it's not in their best interest to share it. You won't get your copy. And then once those files are downloaded, we watermark the files with the reader's information so that we can trace where that book came from. So if we can't stop the book from ending up on a torrent, you can't stop the book from being shared in a Facebook group or something like that. But at the very least, you can figure out who is sharing the books and boot them off your team, because that's just a really crappy thing to do.
Yeah, that's great. So you're adding those type of features. I did wonder, I mean, you mentioned a bit about 70% going to the Kindle. Have you seen any other changes? So, for example, what percentage on e-reading devices versus a mobile versus tablet, for example?
Mm-hmm. And we have statistics on all that. I don't know if you've gone and looked at your dashboard, but the because a lot of authors really do sort of set it and forget it, right? They create their link, and that's beautiful. Is that you can set up that autoresponder sequence with your emails. Once you have a link from us, you just drop that link into an email, and you really can just forget about it. Your books will just churn along and add people to your mailing list, and then people get their books. And so for a lot of authors, they don't see that. If you go back, if you look at your dashboard, we break all that stuff down. So we actually tell you that of the people who've downloaded your book, what percentage have downloaded the Mobi, the EPUB, or the PDF, and then what percentage of devices that they're on. So I would say our biggest downloads come from iOS devices. iPhones and iPads probably make up more than 40% of the total downloads, followed by generic Android devices, so Android phones, Android tablets. And we don't break down those statistics in the dashboard because it just starts to get a little unwieldy, but we know the difference between an Android phone and an Android tablet. And then followed by Kindle Fires, and then really the kind of Kindle e-readers, Kobo e-readers, and things like that sort of trail at the end. And I think that's mostly because those are, I mean, you probably don't own an e-reader unless you're a pretty hardcore reader, but all things being equal, that's still a pretty small portion of the global population. Whereas Android phones, iPhones, cheap Android tablets, yeah, they're permeating every part of the world. I know you've talked about it before, but the $4 phone
in India
goes on sale this week.
Yeah, I know.
And
amazing.
That's huge. That's amazing. And suddenly you're going to start seeing – so we see a lot more of those devices coming online more and more. And the statistics initially did we probably had more Kindles in the beginning, but as we have grown, I have seen the shift to a lot more Android devices. So now it's pretty much iOS, Android, and then the also-rans.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then what about country split? Because, of course, as we said, India is probably coming online. And I see from my website, it's really crazy, like 50 different countries, you know, in terms of traffic. Do you see an international split or is it mainly US?
It's mainly, we see mainly in the U.S., and I think that's pretty, it's common for a lot of, I guess, a lot of U.S. authors, and I don't have any demographics on where our authors come from. I mean, other than a .co.uk email address, I don't know you're in the U.K. unless somebody happens to mention it. So I don't know where most of our authors are coming from. But I do know that, you know, in Mark Dawson's Facebook ads, you know, generally most of them are pitching to U.S. readers. You know, when you tighten up your Facebook audience, a lot of them are using sort of US and Canada to start with. And because they're using those and using Mark's course to build mailing lists, I think we see a disproportionate number of US readers coming in to get the free books. So.
Yeah, to be honest, if you're an author in India, you would be advertising and trying to build your list in America because your profit will be much higher than trying to sell in rupees. So, and it is from Britain, you know, it's still, especially with the Brexit, which has just happened as we record this, the pound has dropped. So the more I can do in US dollars, the better off I'll be. a silver lining to the dark cloud. And the other question I had around that was Nook. Have we seen a drop in Nook? Is anyone really on Nook now?
we actually saw a growth in a slight uptick in Nook. And we got emails from several readers who basically said, thank you for making this so easy. After Barnes & Noble pulled out of the UK, I can't get books on my Nook anymore. And so, you know, authors suddenly had a way to get books because Barnes & Noble had pulled out of the UK completely. You can't get ebooks onto your Nook. There is no store for you to buy from anymore. And the newer Nooks that are like the Samsung Galaxy Nooks, they call them, are really just a Samsung
device.
Yeah, it's just a Samsung Galaxy tab with like a Nook app pre-installed. It's a little bit different than that, but that's basically all it is. And so for those people, they said, okay, well, I guess Barnes & Noble screwed me. I'll go download the Kindle app and start buying books over on Amazon or the Kobo app. And that's exactly what they did. But we did get emails from several UK Nook readers who were just like, thank you, because our process is pretty easy on even those older Nook tablets. But several of those readers, they got screwed. Their older Nook tablet now can't get books, but they can get them from us. And of course, that only, you know, right now we don't do direct sales. We only do free books. So we don't have like a big library or anything that they can download from, but they were just happy that they could suddenly get books again.
So you mentioned it first. What about direct sales? Because that's something I asked you about like last year or something, and it is a big deal. But any plans for doing sales or partnering with Drafter Digital or Smashwords or something so that you could sell off their sites?
We want to, we're hoping to do that at the later part of this year, and we are probably going to talk with other providers. You know, so I know you're using Sells, and the other one that I've seen, you know, a lot of people use Gumroad, which they're really big, and they sort of have their own platform for distribution. So I don't know that we would end up talking to them, but Payhip is another one. And, you know, Payhip, our biggest thing is figuring out what kind of sales provider we want to be. And so we would probably initially roll out to non-VAT countries because it's just easier to not deal with that. And then, you know, I know Sells, you had mentioned that, and I've seen it on their website, that they have a checkbox that says, don't sell to VAT countries because you don't want to deal with that. And the way that Sells handles it is, if you sell to VAT countries, we'll collect the VAT on your behalf, but then it's on you to go and pay your taxes. And Payhip says, we'll do all that for you. They take care of all of the VAT and they pay it on your behalf and they do all of that. So ours is really is figuring out what kind of sales provider we want to be, whether or not we want to be sort of that one-stop shop, which is a lot harder. It requires many lawyers and all kinds of stuff, but that ultimately might be worth it. So I think that our 1.0 is going to be non-VAT countries, because then there really isn't an issue of collecting taxes. And I think, honestly, the book delivery is the harder problem to solve than the actual just collecting of a payment and then sending them a file. And so I think we've already solved the bigger problem. Now it's just, figuring out the details of how we collect the money and then pay the authors.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I've said before, and just in case people didn't know, Selz, SELZ.com. And yes, there is a checkbox. And the reason I use it is because there's an exemption. If you're in the UK, selling to the UK, you're exempted. So basically,
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so I don't sell to other EU countries, although in 2 years we may not also be an EU country.
Other EU.
Yeah, it is difficult. Although I think once something like VAT goes on, they're never going to take it off. Someone will take the money.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's how I'm doing direct sales at the moment. The other question I had, because today as we record this, which will be in the past as people listen, I'm now going to sell my audiobooks direct again. So have, mm-hmm. And the issue with that, of course, is people will buy the MP3s. The MP3s will go onto their computer. They're going to have to then put it into their, whatever the app is, that then they sync to their phone probably. And mm-hmm. The reason, Audible is crushing it in audiobooks because you just go to the thing and then it's on your phone. There is, again, the delivery problem with audio is exactly the same. So have you considered audiobooks as well?
We have, and we get that question every week. Every week some author says, hey, do you guys do audiobooks? And the delivery of audiobooks is a different problem to solve because they're so huge. Mm. You get a 10-hour audiobook, and you're talking about hundreds of megabytes of data. And so for most readers, what they really want is what Audible does, which is stream it one bit at a time, or if I'm going to get on a plane, I want the option to say, yeah, go ahead and download the whole book. I'm going to be on a plane and I'm going to be offline. Mm. And so it's not an unsolvable problem. It's just very different than distributing an ebook that is might be 1 or 2 megabytes large. And we run into people right now that tell us that, well, I couldn't get the book. I don't have any space on my Android. But the book's only a megabyte.
Yeah.
But they can't, they really have that little space. And so it's just a different kind of problem to solve. But it is one that we want to look at for later this year, along with a bunch of little smaller things and other features that we want to build on.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, and I also think that, there's increasing kind of disillusionment with ACX, mm-hmm. with the royalties through Audible. So a lot of people are like, this is crazy. It was a good deal, but now the sales have dropped. The revenue has dropped, even if the sales volume hasn't, the revenue has. So that's why I'm not going to sell these on ACX. It's just because I can't control the price. I also think I just bought 164, whatever it is, the biggest iPhone, because my other iPhone, which I've had for a few years, was fine 2 years ago, and now it just won't cope. So obviously these devices are getting bigger and bigger in terms of their storage. So presumably that size issue will change. Like, it's got to change in the next couple of years, hasn't it?
Yes. And that's just it. It's like the amount of data that they can fit into a small space grows every year. And so, if you can imagine, it's like 128 gigabytes, which is the largest iPhone, they can now put that much memory in something the size of my thumbnail.
Mm.
And that is just insane. I mean, to somebody who's been on the computers their whole lives, that is just a crazy amount of data in a very, very tiny space. And so I do think that there will be, it's just like anything. It's one of those problems that technology may solve for us.
Mm.
And then, MP3s made it possible to carry music around in your pocket. MP3s made it possible to take a very, very large piece of music and compress it down to a few megabytes. So without MP3s, that whole thing, without the technology of MP3 compression, none of that would have existed. So that was a problem that technology came along and somebody solved. And that was software, which is always better because software can solve a problem with an update, whereas hardware requires entirely new devices and sometimes entirely new ways of thinking to solve the problem.
Mm. No, I'm very excited. I some days I just think, why, like your book funnel, for example, and not that I'm saying you took so long, but how come it took it's so long for there to be like an answer to this problem, because if you listen to podcasts and things from a couple of years ago, everyone's like, someone's going to do this, someone's going to do this, and now you've done it, and it's awesome. But I wondered, like, what is your opinion of some of the other things that are going to change in the next few years? Like, what are you excited about? What do you think is coming for indies, or even just in the tech world in general? You know, like, I'm total VR centric.
Yeah. I think for as far as like publishing, the things that I'm most excited to see are we're seeing a lot of growth in other non-Amazon ebook stores, which I think is great, because I mean, we all love Amazon. Amazon started the revolution and made it all possible, but having one company sort of hold all the cards is not good for anybody but Amazon. And so and the same thing you're seeing now with Audible and ACX. There really is no other game in town. I mean, if you want to do audiobooks, you're going to sell them through Audible. You're going to publish them there, and you're going to take whatever terms they tell you to take, or you're not going to be moving any audiobooks. And so having somebody else grow, you know, watching Kobo has continued to grow, which is great, because Barnes & Noble is continuing to shrink. And unfortunately, it's like, you know, for the longest time, it looked like Barnes & Noble was the only one who could take on Amazon. And now it pretty well looks like they're just throwing in the towel and giving up. Apple, you know, a few years ago was an also-ran. It was like, oh yeah, and you can get iBooks on your iPad, and maybe you can go read a book over there, but you probably don't want to. And now Apple has grown, and Apple has the money to compete with Amazon. And I think competition's a great thing. So I would say the move to mobile everywhere is huge. I mean, the fact that people in the most far remote villages can get an Android phone and be online, be on the internet, is crazy. From a kid who used to dial in on a little 300 baud modem, it's amazing that, and you know, My kids grow up are in a world where the internet is just all around them all the time. You know, even when we're driving in the car, their iPads are connected to my 4G iPhone's connection. And so we're driving along, and my daughter's like, "Dad, my iPad's not working." And I was like, "Yeah, we're in the middle of nowhere. The network is not working right now." It's like, "Well, can you fix it?" "No, I can't fix the cellular internet in the middle of nowhere. You're just going to have to wait until we get a better connection."
But they, and that's what's interesting, because they expect it to be in the air. That's they are expecting. Like, why isn't the internet everywhere, Dad? You know,
it took several minutes of explaining what the internet was, and there was just like, well, the internet's down. Well, I guess I'll just. My son was trying to play a game that required network connectivity, and when I told him, I'm like, the internet is down, and they're working on it. Well, I guess I'll just go watch YouTube. No, the internet is down. You can't do anything except play what's on your device, and only if it's not a network game. I don't know how else to tell you.
But how old are they, your kids?
Oh, my son is 9, my daughter is 6, and then my littlest girl is turning 3 in 2 days. So they're all, but they really have their whole lives grown up with the internet just all around them. They can just pick up anything in the house, and it's connected to the internet.
Yeah, it's so funny, isn't it? And they, I read, I think it was in Wired this week or something, you know, like a two-year-old, three-year-old, like your littlest, you know, who kind of would pick up a photo, a physical photo, and like tap on it and try and expand it. It's like, why can't I zoom in on this photo? And it's just, you know, the things that we, you and I being older, didn't grow up with. But yeah, I mean, we're me and my husband, you know, I think we're more like millennials in the way that we live. And it is that total connection all the time. And I agree with you. I think one of the biggest revolutions is 4G internet access across the whole world. And that $4 phone, what we didn't say is that's a smartphone, right? It's not
it's not just a cheapy phone.
No, it's actually a smartphone.
Yeah, it's an Android device, fully functioning, that can do everything that my device, maybe not as fast, but it can certainly do everything that, you know, the top of the line device can do here in the States. That will cost you $800, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so that's, I see those advancements coming, and that just, I sit and wonder just like, what does that mean for the world? How is that? Because already, I mean, the internet has changed everything. You and I are talking right now because we have the internet. My little brother lives in France. I'm able to FaceTime with him. I mean, that used it to make a call to France used to cost like $8,000. And now, you know, we just FaceTime for free and I get to see video of his little girl who was born last Christmas. I get to see all of that because the internet has changed everything about our lives. And so how will it change as truly 6 billion people are able to get online and not just the people in the sort of richer countries that have been able to have access to all of that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it will be an explosion of more books, but also an explosion of readers. And, you know, when I recently did my 1 year's worth of book sales, it was only 45% sales in the US. And I was surprised. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really surprising.
So actually, the majority of sales are already outside the US for someone like me. And that's crazy. And it means that as to, I thought I would start measuring it this year in order that over the next few years, we would see it change. And I was super surprised to find it was already
how quickly it's changing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it had already changed.
Yeah. So I think we'll see that shift over time. Okay. So we're pretty much out of time. Tell people where they can find BookFunnel and information about how it works and also about where they can find you online.
So bookfunnel.com is where you can find us, and we have all the information there, pricing plans and all that sort of stuff. And our cheapest plan is $20 a year. So we really made it really inexpensive for every author to use it, even if you're just starting out and it's your first book. And then for me, DamonJCourtney.com is my author site, where my fantasy books unfortunately have been languishing while I continue my work.
While you serve everyone else.
Exactly. While I serve everyone else's books, my poor little trilogy is languishing over there. So
fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Damon. That was great.
Thank you so much for having me, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.